Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, as well as in the evenings on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to be with you today, Matt and Patrick. I do have one little bit of housekeeping here, Chicago folks. You'll want to hear this just because you're going to want to hear this interview tomorrow. The show that's after mine here locally is Robert Pilot and Crew Native Roots Radio, which is an absolute freaking privilege to be the lead in for. Native Roots Radio is Native American conversation, Native American issues, Native American news, and sweet Lord, is this a needed thing? My gosh, I mean, I can't think of anyone else that's doing this on a national level like this. They do a fantastic job. And Robert Pilot is an amazingly cool person, and he and I talk baseball all the time, like baseball. We're trying to get the second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, on the air, the vice president's husband. And, Patrick, you and I, we like to think of ourselves as complicated, difficult people. We have no idea what a complicated schedule is, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You're right.
Do I watch Netflix or Prime? I'm so overwhelmed. No, my schedule is nothing. Imagine being the second gentleman of the United States is such a touch big, busy. Delayed today. It is delayed today. They're going to, and this is going to be airing tomorrow on Native Roots Radio. So we'll be airing on Tuesday. So for everyone out there and for the Chicago folks, yeah, enjoy. I mean, it's the second gentleman of the United States of America. That's a good get. I had a guy who once gave me a burrito. I interviewed him one time. That was very nice. I mean, it was a good burrito. It was a good burrito, for goodness sakes. It's not the second gentleman in the United States. So that interview with Native Roots Radio, that will air tomorrow on Native Roots Radio. All right. Just make sure to mention that. I'll mention that again coming up here. Also with Listener Appreciation Month coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we have Wheel of Destiny returning. We got some nice prizes to give away today. Patrick, we hit 74. In Minneapolis on March 3rd. By the way, the earliest by far we've ever hit 70 in the Twin Cities. Did you get out and enjoy it at all this weekend?
I did, but it was a little bit of a different way. I was in Duluth for the weekend doing some other work, so I did not get the 74.
But you got like 60 up there, didn't they? Get like pretty close to 60?
Duluth, the proper did not. It didn't get out of the 30s. I mean, that's still pretty warm for early March for Duluth, but I missed out on all the fun, but yeah, that's okay.
Chicago, you get this. You do get this. Duluth being wedged where it is, right there on the shores of Lake Superior, you will be 30 miles outside of Duluth, and it'll be 85 degrees and sunny. By the time you get down the big hill into Duluth itself, right on the waterfront there, it's 50. It's cloudy and raining, and you're like, how is this even possible? So it just never got above 30s up there. All right. My daughter goes up there. She's at UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth. She's a Bulldog up there, so she goes to college up there. So I get up there as much as I can. It is a lovely town. Duluth is actually a very lovely town, but it is its own thing, man. Chicago, you do get that a little bit, especially get down by the waterfront. You know, it'll be, you're out by Rockford. It's, roasty toasty, but you get by the water and, that's part of the appeal by being by the water is it knocks it down a little bit there. And so, yeah, I know Chicago got pretty warm this weekend too. So, I hope it's horribly, horribly wrong, but it is delightful. I got out into the parks this weekend. I walked, one of the lakes in the Twin Cities, Bede-Mikaska, and that was packed to the gills. I went hiking in another park on Saturday, packed to the gills. Everyone was getting out. It's very it's not normal. It's not normal at all. I mean, the high is supposed to be in the Twin Cities, something like 37, 38 degrees, and it's 74. Yeah, it's horribly wrong, but it was delightful to get out there and enjoy it. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm going to draw you to my social media page. all of them. And by the way, there are plenty of places to just wrap your arms around this show. You like the Facebook side? That's Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. Tons of people there. I'm on Blue Sky Matt McNeil Show there on Blue Sky. You can find me on Mastodon, which is kind of interesting. But find me on Mastodon over there. I think I'm under Mastodon Party. That's their hub. I'm under is Mastodon Party, because of course. Threads, which by the way, Threads is representing people that are not on Threads. I got to ask you why you're not on Threads, because I've had a few posts there that have easily gotten over 1,000 hits, and it's remarkable. Threads is thriving. So I'm on Threads. You can find me there. And then of course, if you are so inclined on Twitter, the dark cloud that is our coexistence, thanks to Elon Musk. When he debuted the Tesla truck, that should have been our first clue. You know, this guy is he's not a happy fella, is he? Anyway, Twitter is up and running, and it is magical. And you can find me at Matt McNeil Show over there. And so I want to drive you over to those sites, because I, walking around, I was wearing my new shirt that looks like the new flag of the state of Minnesota. And I like it. It needed to be updated. The old flag had racist imagery on it. Basically, white farmers running Native Americans off their land. Not good. Plus, it just was clunky. It was more attuned to a day when you painted ads on the side of a building. That sort of thing, you know? Just was clunky. A lot of words, a lot of details. And it didn't look anything different than anyone else's. So they made a new one, which has got a chevron on the left side with light blue and dark blue, and it's got a star on it, and it's quite lovely, and it represents this blue sky, blue water, and the North Star State. I think they did an exceptional job. And, of course, every conservative, even though the committee that did this map, or did this flag, was made up of some far-right Republicans were on it, they still, it's like, it's the woke flag. And so the blank your feelings crew is suddenly needing therapy, because where did the flag touch you, sir? That sort of thing. You know, they're losers. I think the right term is losers. But it is amazing. Now, the vast majority of people like the flag. I like it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a pretty stunning flag. And it's kind of this trend now. Utah's got a new flag coming out, which is really cool. I like the Utah flag a lot. I think the bellwether for changing it up was South Carolina, which went with that dark blue with the palmetto tree and the crescent on there. Just exceptional. That's a great flag. A lot of other ones, they don't have any words on them. They're just pretty flags, and they're very noticeable. You can tell which ones they are right away. You know, and sit down, Maryland. You're a little too clunky. I mean, my gosh, what is that? Is that a magic eye? Anyway, if you know the Maryland flag, you're probably laughing. This is flag humor, folks. Where else are you going to get flag humor on your Monday? Anywho, so I put the picture out there, and the most people like it. But of course, Twitter. I start getting the you're ugly, or you know derogatory terms for the LGBTQ community, that I'm a Somali all of a sudden, stuff like that. You know, racism, bigotry, the standard fare from a lot of accounts, which, you know, some of them are the name 18 numbers. Sure, whatever you say, Vlad. How are things in Albania today? That sort of thing. But some of them are not, or at least they don't appear to be. And yet they are coming in with the shot. And I just, as I was doing this, it is, you guys are sad. You Republican trolls that just, you wake up every morning and your goal is to find things to insult and demean because it makes you feel better about yourself. I want you to think, I mean, these are not people who are following me, and these are not people I am following. So there is no previous connection between the standard drive-by insult and myself. There is no established relationship. Yet, this is, they feel the need to come by and say, "You're stupid!" You know, that sort of thing. And I think they think they're Chandler from Friends. I think every villain is the hero of their own story. So if that is indeed true, what are they thinking? They think they're making funny jokes. They think that they're the guy with 12 followers is all of a sudden the second coming of Seinfeld, and they're making comedy jokes, and they think that this is what's finally going to get them a friend or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever they need, but out of their mom's basement and into society. Damn, I'm good at this. But instead, it just comes off as mean-spirited and angry and bitter. And it would be like just randomly going to someone's house, opening the door, not knocking, just opening the door, walking in and saying, "You're the color of your living room is sucks," and walking out and try and imagining, I think, there's going to be a line of people after you have done that lining up to high-five you because, boy, oh, boy, you sure gave it to Gladys over there, you know, talking about the color of her living room. Oh, boy, you put her in her place. And yet that's what they think this is. That's what they think. It's got to be. I mean, don't get me wrong. I know that some of this is trolls, so it's hate for hate's sake. But there are people that do this, that wake up every day, and the first thing they say is, "Who can I insult now?" And to you, from the bottom of my heart, let me say, oh, that's so sad. It's a shame you're so sad. I mean, you are the guy that for many years, that when people would see coming down the street, would cross the street so they would not have to go past you. Because you stand out so plainly within society that you're that kind of a person. So I'm going to give you some advice. Stop, all right? Stop. Get offline. You see that bright sun thing out there sometimes? That's the sun. You need to go out and explore. Try not to be a jerk and realize, no, you're not very funny. And you're more of a pain in the tuckus. But, hey, this is just me. I've got friends. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Make them sing to this thing like a melody. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I just had one. A guy came by and tried to do a drive-by on me, which was it was the picture of me wearing the flag and shirt, and he basically said something about, "You forgot your white face paint and orange wig for the rest of your outfit." I said, "I'm sorry, sir. I'm not going to be your usual Monday hookup. Maybe try OnlyFans." So there are ways for you to kind of kidney punch him back. But, they never learn. So long, losers. Speaking of losers and trolling, the New York Times. If you are like me, I'm not even going to repeat the freaking poll they tried to put forward as an authoritative element of this. I spent some time yesterday checking in with people who are younger than 30 and talking with them in regards to how often do they answer a cell phone call because they don't have landlines. How often they answer a cell phone call that says unlisted or they don't recognize the number. And it was zero. Now, I did say, well, what if they left a message and they said, "Hey, I'm with a polling company. We have a quick 10-minute poll. Would you call me back?" How many of them would call them back? Zero. They wouldn't. That's not something on their agenda. They don't care. That's not how you approach them. That's not how you survey them. That's not how you get them. The New York Times put out this Times Siena poll that basically says Trump is leading, and it's you know, most Democrats are upset with Biden, stuff like this. And you look at the poll, and this is a country of 330 million people. They used 1,000 people. They contact people only via landlines, which is going to skew you towards the right like nothing else will today. Because there is, I mean, I'll give you an example. I've got a landline still for my house when we first moved in there 20 plus years ago. I don't answer it. I never answer that landline anymore. Doesn't mean some people don't call me in with legitimate things, but I never answer it. On my cell phone, I sure as heck don't answer calls from phone numbers I don't recognize. So, and I'm 55, so I'm, you know, and I don't think I'm too outlandishly unusual for even Generation X. That, you know, you learn your lesson, you know, it's like, okay, they're trying to infiltrate you this way. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm not going to do it. But Generation Z and especially late millennials, they just don't answer the phone. So your survey, as much as you're saying, well, we got these people who are this age and we got this, you know, demographic, although once again, their largest demographic was independents, which is another huge red flag. I know a lot of Democrats. I don't know any Democrat, people that vote Democrat, who say I'm an independent. The only people that say independents are people who are generally former moderate Republicans who just can't stand Trump and where the Republican Party has gone today. Or Republicans who like to pretend that they're nuanced, pretend that they're clever. Look at me, I'm a clever, nuanced individual. And they're not. It's like, oh, I'm an independent, but I'm voting for Trump. Well, that doesn't make you a Republican. No. I vote for Trump. So the fact that the largest group of people surveyed here were independents, which is an insanely small minority of voters, if it is actual independents, leads me to believe that's your another red flag on this. This poll was clearly had issues, but didn't stop the New York Times. And I went off on a rant yesterday where I basically, you know, I said, I'm getting real tired of how the news media in this country and their daily Biden is horrible and Trump is a lovable scamp. Oh, what is the next madcap behavior that we can get from Donnie T? Like he's a little rascal character. He's a horrible person. He's a convicted criminal. He's been found guilty of rape in civil court. He has been proven to be a business fraud. He owes $500 million in fines for criminal behavior. He personally profited illegally while in the White House. Trump stole boxes and boxes of classified documents from the government, some of which are still unaccounted for. Trump quotes Hitler, that Hitler. Trump brags about being a dictator. Trump threatened about deport an entire religion. Trump has consistently shown hostility towards the armed forces. Trump has consistently shown he favors Russia over the United States. Trump says his supporters supports Israel, but he also supports a heck of a lot of anti-Semites. And he's tried to overthrow the government, something we have copious amount of evidence that he's trying to do. And his mental decline is something that is clearly a problem. One of the posts I saw today, yesterday he had two speeches. He had 32 gaffes in there. 32. Some of them were just hard to even comprehend. I'll add in there the fact that, you know, you keep giving him a pass, even though Nikki Haley is doing a lot better than you want to give her credit for. As a matter of fact, that was part of the story yesterday. Nikki Haley on Sunday defeated Donald Trump in the GOP presidential primary in Washington, D.C. for her first official win against the former president. A relatively tiny victory. I'm not saying that this is a bellwether of the nation. As goes D.C., goes the rest of the GOP. No, I'm not saying that. But it is still a win with a guy that the media, including the New York Times, labels as unbeatable. You know, when he wins 60-40, that is a domination. That's how they say it. By the way, that story I read about Nikki Haley, it's a relatively tiny victory. Trump will only certainly use to portray Haley as a D.C. swamp creature. D.C.'s 19 delegates now cast their votes for her in the RNC in July. Out of 24,029 delegates so far, Trump has trounced her on the other states in the state primary. But Where did I get that story? Not from the New York Times. As a matter of fact, this happened, and guess what the New York Times did not report on? Well, they did, but it was buried. And I mean buried deep in the New York Times to find this. It's clear that there is an agenda here. Whether it's just stupidity and laziness because they don't know how to poll Generation Z. They don't know how to poll the millennials. So they're basically saying, well, we're just going to do what we've always done and say it's legit. That aside, there is clearly this unfettered bias towards Trump by the national media. And it's getting pretty obscene at this point. And we've got to... This is inexcusable at this point. And I get it. You don't want this election to be a Biden runaway because that means less money from special interest groups and PACs and stuff like that. It definitely hurts down ticket. So you might see less vote, you know, less money coming in from Republican candidates and other races. But the reality is that it does not do us a disservice for you to basically go on out there and portray this as something it's not. And not only do you guys try your hardest to turn the most minuscule issues with Biden into the biggest crimes of all time, but your even more egregious crime is that you have these things that Trump is doing that you're giving him a pass on and acting like it's no big deal. It's a big deal. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I'll talk about the court ruling from the Supreme Court today. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk and in the afternoon on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I was talking about Trump and the fact that the news media pulls their punches. And in you know what they're doing is setting up and they're particularly playing favorites. I mean, it's not putting a finger on the scale. It's basically jumping off the third turnbuckle and trying to jam that scale down so it doesn't go the other way. And I, you know, like I said, I think that the remaining members of the news media that are not bought and paid for trolls, I think honestly feel as if, well, if I just bash Trump because of all the things that Trump does, I'm going to look like I'm a Trump basher. So I think that they've outthought themselves and they think to themselves, I've got to go out there and find some way to even this playing field, which is not your job. It's not your job. And it sure as hell is never your job when a Democrat does something wrong. You never go on out there. I remember there have been numerous times here in the media in the Twin Cities where there might have been a scandal against a Democrat and the knives are out. They're looking for red meat. But it was when there was a scandal against a Republican and half the news media in town said, well, it's the holidays. We don't really want to bother them with this now. I'm like, what the hell? No. That's irrelevant. But they couldn't go out of their way to make enough excuses for them. So I think what happens sometimes is this: the media has been just browbeaten down. They're kind of like a prisoner at this point in a POW camp. They just basically the Stockholm syndrome. They basically try their hardest to basically, I don't want to upset the Republicans. And so they're always looking for a narrative that Democrat bad. And like I said, the biggest, more egregious problem is this: Trump is not as bad as he really is. And I already can see these guys, if God forbid Trump was to win another term, that they would sit there and say, boy, oh boy, how did a guy who quotes Hitler win? Well, how many times did you mention he was quoting Hitler before this? Well, that's irrelevant. Everybody knew that. No, you never. You guys can't not report the news and then criticize everyone for not knowing the news. That's what they're doing. The Supreme Court today weighed in on this, and I understand their argument. I don't. How do you hold people accountable? Because it sounds like what they've just done is created a series of steps to where it is almost going to be impossible to hold someone accountable for their actions in the future, especially in our divided country. The U.S. Supreme Court overruled a Colorado court's decision barring Donald Trump from appearing on the 2024 presidential ballot in an unsigned and unanimous decision on Monday. The case revolved around the clause of the 14th Amendment stating that anyone who took an oath of office to uphold the U.S. Constitution but then engaged in insurrection or rebellion against it is ineligible to hold state or federal office. The Colorado Supreme Court had ruled December 19th that Trump's actions in support of the January 6th insurrection disqualified him from the ballot. The Supreme Court disagreed, arguing that states do not have the ability under the 14th Amendment to disqualify candidates for federal office. We conclude that states may disqualify persons holding or attempting to hold state office, the decision states, but states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency. Now, I want to stop there because there is one thing very clear that has been said. If you are in Illinois or if you're in Minnesota or even Wisconsin right now, and you are thinking about some of these January 6 guys who basically then try to run for a state office seat, like a House seat or a Senate seat or in Wisconsin, the Assembly, or, you know, might try to run for the governor's office or something like that. Now they can be officially, the Supreme Court has said, no, states can boot these guys off the ballot, plain and simple. If it's a state race, the state can say, you know what, you partook in the insurrection and they're gone. So there is a little bit of positive here that the Supreme Court has definitively said that these clowns that ran for that tried to overthrow the government on January 6th, if they try to run for a state office, they can be booted off the ballot. Plain and simple. But, and here is the part, and unfortunately, Stein's not going to join us this week. I'm going to see if I get Cliff Schechter this week. But Stein's not going to join us this week. But Stein on Wednesdays has always said, well, the election is not a federal election. It's basically a bunch of states. It's the Electoral College. We do not elect. I mean, for it to be a federal election, it should be this many people voted for this person, this many people voted for this person. Henceforth, the higher vote total wins and we're done. Something Republicans, by the way, are terrified of ever getting put into place. So we have what's called the Electoral College, which basically means each individual state, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, we all basically have our own statewide election, and that the winner of that state goes the Electoral College votes. The Electoral College then elects the president. That's how it works. This is a big step into basically saying, yeah, we do it this way, but the states really don't have the right to decide what's on their state ballots anymore. The court's decision ensures that Trump will remain on the ballot in Colorado and Maine and Illinois, where judges and election officials similarly ruled him ineligible under the 14th Amendment. Illinois, I give you a lot of credit. We didn't do that here in Minnesota. I wish we had, even though it would have been overturned. The decision came the day before Colorado's Republican presidential primary election, which the state's top court had ordered Trump disqualified from. And it should be mentioned earlier in the story, and this is from Huffington Post, they did say a court decision. This is a Colorado Supreme Court decision on this. So it wasn't just some random court. This was a Supreme Court decision in the state of Colorado that decided this. While the Supreme Court allowed Donald Trump back onto the ballot on a technical legal grounds, this was in no way a win for Trump, said Noah Bookbinder, executive director for Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, the liberal legal group that led Colorado's lawsuit. He said in a statement, the Supreme Court had the opportunity in this case to exonerate Trump, and they chose not to do that. Trump, on the other hand, big win for America. Hello. Give me some ketchup. We're celebrating. The case came before the court after a group in Colorado voters challenged Trump's ineligibility under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment in the state court. The challenge followed the series of lawsuits brought by Crew and Free Speech for People, another liberal legal group seeking to disqualify other candidates from office for their participation or alleged involvement in the January 6th insurrection. It should be noted in Colorado specifically, Republicans were the ones that were trying to get him booted off the ballot. amongst other groups. At first, a Colorado court ruled against the challenge to Trump's ballot eligibility by claiming that the presidency was not in office under the United States to which Section 3 applied. On appeal, the Colorado Supreme Court overruled the lower state court ruling on a 4-3 decision to find that Section 3 applied to the presidency and the court that Trump engaged in insurrection that warranted disqualification from future political office. In its decision, the Supreme Court remained silent on whether Trump engaged in insurrection or not. They did not, as much as I've seen a lot of Republicans say, see, the Supreme Court said there was no insurrection. They actually laid off that. They went out of their way to not chime in on that in this ruling. They instead solely determined that states do not have the authority under Section 3 to disqualify a federal candidate. Because federal officers owe their existence and functions to the united voice of the whole, not to a portion of the people. This is the same. This is the Supreme Court ruling that this has happened now multiple times where the guy who got less votes than the other guy was named president. But okay, fine. They owe their existence and functions to the united voice of the whole, not a portion of the people. Powers over the election and qualifications must be specifically delegated to rather than reserved by the states. The decision says, quoting a 1995 precedent from U.S. Term Limits, Inc. versus Thornton, where it struck down the state-imposed term limits on congressional candidates. While the court spoke in a united voice in its decision that states do not have the authority to disqualify federal candidates under Section 3, four justices dissented from the decision's assertion that Section 3 could only be enforced by congressional legislation. So once again, the five on a 5-4 ruling, basically, there was an assertion that Section 3 could be enforced by congressional legislation, which does mean what they're saying is that, okay, so we now know that the state can disqualify a January 6th insurrectionist from a statewide office. That has been decided. The Supreme Court weighed in on that. That's the decision. So if someone is running for a local, you know, Illinois Senate seat and they're January 6th, the state can say, nope, you're off the ballot. You're an insurrectionist. There's nothing. The Supreme Court's pretty much put that into stone at this point. But they did say that if the Congress was to act and pull someone off a federal ballot, that that is something they can do. Now, the times that this has been invoked has been on a national level where it's been people, you know, especially in the post-Civil War, that people that supported the South were removed from Congress and in that case. But this, it does say that, you know, so it's not saying that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is useless. It just basically says the process here is this, that the federal government has to basically say someone cannot run for office. And if that's the case, then I'm guessing what they're saying is that doesn't become an absolute, but then it does open the doors for the states individually to remove that candidate from the ballot. At least that's how I'm taking it, that the Congress says, we have determined that, and let's just take a Senate seat, a U.S. Senate seat, that such and such candidate from Kentucky is guilty of insurrection against the country, or working with the federal government, or working against the federal government in an insurrection after they swore allegiance to the Constitution. So we have determined that that person can then be excluded from the ballot. Then it goes back to that state, and if the state then decides, yes, you can remove him from the ballot, then there is no recourse, at least. So there is, even the five justices that went along with that said that basically there's a way to do this. Now, it's not going to happen with this Congress. But still, today the majority, this is a concurrence from liberal justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Brown Jackson. Today the majority goes beyond the necessities of this case to limit how Section 3 can ban an oath-breaking insurrectionist from becoming president. Although we agree that the Colorado cannot enforce Section 3, we protest the majority's efforts to use this case to define the limits of federal enforcement of that provision. So they're basically saying you can't just go all of a sudden, because this is a constitutional amendment, you can't just all of a sudden say, well, it says this when it doesn't say that at all. And that's once again what these five conservative justices have just done. They've said, even though it doesn't say this, we're saying this is how it has to happen, which that's not what the rule is. In addition, Barrett issued her own concurrence saying that the case does not require us to address the complicated question whether federal legislation is the exclusive vehicle through which Section 3 can be enforced. So even Barrett came on back and said, you know, I don't know if you can just say this has to go through a legislative thing. I think there are other ways for us to do this. I'm just not going to say this is the only way. The court's decision to allow Trump to remain on the ballot was not a surprise. When it heard oral arguments in early February, the court appeared unanimous in its skepticism towards the Colorado Supreme Court's ruling that Trump was disqualified from office because of his role in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. So, yeah. Not a surprise, I don't think, especially after the arguments. It was pretty clear, I think, that they were saying they just didn't they didn't want this to happen. And the reality is that one of the arguments they made is that, you know, what happens when you just get a bunch of Republicans with no reason? They just say, we're going to just take this person off the we're going to incite the third Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, even though they haven't done anything wrong. Do we allow that to happen? So they basically have said to the states, you can't just remove a federal candidate from office without a congressional act to do so. Even the conservative justices have said there's a path to do this. There are four justices that have said, and they're, you know, it just tells you if Thomas or Alito is all of a sudden to retire. I mean, who doesn't love that RV in the sky sort of thing? That'd be fantastic for Thomas there. If they don't do that, then one of them retired, then you'd have a 5-4 potentially where that could basically be overturned. And indeed that there are other options to take a person off a ballot. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on a Monday. Try to make it. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number here. We've got Super Tuesday tomorrow. Huge day across the country. A lot of states participating in that. And wanted to take some time here because there are some things up and down on Super Tuesday we should be paying attention to. Likely even more consequential than the day's presidential contests are which are unlikely to change the trajectory of the Democratic and Republican races in that on the ballot Tuesday are primaries for U.S. Senate and governor, but it's the primaries for the U.S. House where Republicans are defending a razor-thin majority that are by far the most important in the balance of power in Washington. Central to the fight for control is the chamber in California. Democrats need a net gain of 4 seats to flip the House, and in California alone, the party is targeting 7 GOP-held seats. President Biden would have won 5 of them in 2020 had the current district lines been in place, making these so-called crossover districts potentially low-hanging fruit for a party looking to flip seats. I know New York as well is another place where they definitely the Democrats could pick up some seats, as well as Wisconsin. There's some places. Other states holding primaries from competitive House races include North Carolina and Texas, and to a lesser extent, Alabama, where redistricting has created a new district that's much more favorable to the Democrats. The 4 states in Arkansas also have primaries for seats seen as safe for either party, but the nominating contest could serve as a key ideological test. Only Texas and California have Senate primaries on Tuesday. Republicans need to pick up only one or two seats in the fall, depending on who wins the White House, to win the majority. The Texas race for GOP Senator Ted Cruz's seat has taken on increased importance as the Senate Democrats is what... Yeah, and what is otherwise a tough landscape for them. North Carolina is also hosting a gubernatorial primaries on Tuesday in a race to secede longtime Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. The open seat contest is expected to draw fierce attention in the presidential battleground state. Two Alabama Republicans elected in 2020 are facing off for the first in a first member versus member primary of the cycle. In response to a court decision ordering the state to create a second majority black district or something drawn close to it, the second district, held by GOP Representative Barry Moore, was redrawn to increase its black population. Moore is now running in the current first district. Tells you everything about Moore and these guys, where he doesn't even try to win his district. He's running away from it because he knows that he has no chance. Republican Jerry Carl, who now represents the current version of First District, but they're obviously that's going to be a bit of a fight. I would say that's for sure. I'm almost guaranteeing that Alabama seat's going to go pick up to the Dems. So there's one right there. Of the four seats you need to win the House, it's one right there. Between California and New York, they should, the Democrats should pick up at least four or five seats. We'll have to see. The outcome of this race could help shape the tenor of the House GOP conference. Moore, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, has been campaigning with Marjorie Taylor Greene and touts his opposition to funding for Ukraine. Carl and his donations that signal more establishment support from the likes of Chamber of Commerce and the GOP donor Paul Singer. Both are pitching themselves as Trump conservatives in a new district that the former president would have won by 50 points. The jockeying for late Senator Dianne Feinstein's seat began well before she died. It's only intensified since Governor Gavin Newsom appointed LaFonza Butler to succeed Feinstein, and Butler decided to not run for the full term. Tuesday's primary will determine which two candidates will advance to in November to an election that has seen far more ad spending, excluding future reservations, than any other non-presidential federal contest. So far, Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, who led the Trump's first impeachment prosecution, has dominated the airwaves as he tries to cast his first two-way contest between himself and former L.A. Dodgers star Steve Garvey, who's running as a Republican. Schiff ads argue that Garvey's pose is a threat to Democratic control of the Senate and that the congressman is the one to stop him. Representative Katie Porter, who came to Congress, and I love Katie Porter, I do, in 2018, Blue Wave is attacking that strategy of her own that tout her refusal to cooperate, PAC money, and showcase her signature whiteboards. Representative Barbara Lee, who was the only member of Congress to vote against the 2001 authorization for military force after 9/11, has the backing of an outside group called She Speaks For Me. Lee supporters have touted the fact that she would bring diversity to the Senate. Butler, who won't be returning this year, is currently the only black woman serving in the chamber. As reading a little bit of an analysis on this, I get a little wonkish with politics sometimes. And yeah, they're saying that the problem they've had is that Porter and Lee are considered to be progressives. And Schiff is not exactly a moderate Democrat by any means, but they're considered to be definitely on that more left side, and that they themselves have pretty much diffused each other's campaign. So right now, it's kind of pegging towards Adam Schiff being the winner and taking on Steve Garvey. I can tell you that right now, Garvey is a freaking loon ball. I mean, he really is. U.S. Representative Colin Aldred, a former NFL player who flipped a Dallas House area seat in 2018, appears well-positioned financially to win the Democratic nod to take on Ted Cruz, who only faces token opposition in his primary. Alfred ended the pre-primary reporting period February 14th with more than $8 million in the bank. He will need to clear 50% of the vote to avoid a runoff. I will say this. Even Republicans in Texas do not like Ted Cruz. Even Republicans don't like him that much. So that's not nearly... It's like Rick Scott in Florida. Sure, he looks like he's there. And, you know, if it was someone else, he'd probably be a shoo-in. You know, in Texas, it's Cornyn. Cornyn would be a shoo-in. You know, Democrats probably don't even run a candidate against him. But Ted Cruz, yeah, if all of a sudden Trump starts becoming more and more foggy and Nikki Haley is looking more and more like she's not going to endorse Trump, and so her voters don't go away, if it's starting to look like it's going to be a real bad year for Republicans, that Ted Cruz seat is not a guaranteed pickup for the Republicans. So he's got some Aldred's got some competition there, but he's right now the favorite. Both parties are picking in their nominees Tuesday in North Carolina, and one of the only two states with competitive gubernatorial races in 2024. New Hampshire is the other. On the GOP side, the front runner is Trump-backed Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. He's a controversial figure whose past hardline stances on abortion Democrats may use against him. You'd be a dang fool if you didn't use those against him. He is atrocious. On the Democratic side, State Attorney General Josh Stein is the leading contender. His likely matchup will overlap with the focus of the presidential candidates on this battleground state. Yeah, Robinson is, he's one of those guys where no excuses for rape, incest, or life of the mother. So, you know, in his effort to be pro-life, mom can die at any point, and that's just the case. So, if you're North Carolina, I'm going to guess you're going to see a lot about Robinson and his past statements, which he's tried to distance himself from. Chicago, have a great one. We're back on a Tuesday. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Hour number two of the show here on your Monday. Good to be with you today. 952-946-6205. Matt McNeil and Patrick here. So, Patrick, I'm going to read this I'm going to read this first sentence of this story to you, and I think you're going to be like me, and like I think most of the people at Twin Cities, kind of shocked by this a little bit. We mentioned last week Richard Lewis, the comedian, died, right?
Yes, unfortunately, right. I did see that.
Richard Lewis, the comic who shared his neurosis on shows ranging from Late Night with David Letterman to Curb Your Enthusiasm, was laid to rest this week in a private service at Temple of Aaron Cemetery in Roseville.
I did see this headline earlier, and I wondered about the same thing.
According to his death certificate, Lewis, 76, died February 27th after suffering a heart attack. He also dealt with Parkinson's disease, which had forced him from his semi-retirement last year. Lewis, who earned the nickname Prince of Pain with his unique brand of dark comedy, was raised in New Jersey and never lived in Minnesota, but his wife, Joyce, is a St. Paul native and attended the University of Minnesota. Hi, Joyce. I'm sorry about your loss. All my best to your family. Richard was unbelievable. I'm 55 years old. I grew up with Richard Lewis. This one hurt. This hurt myself. So all my best to you and your family there on your loss. Before working in Los Angeles and New York, she worked with Lips, Inc., the Minneapolis-based funk band responsible for the worldwide hit Funky Town. Wow, she is credited with contributing background vocals to the band's 1979 album, Mouth to Mouth, which featured a breakout single. She would also go on to executive create positions in both music and comedy. She helped produce HBO specials for both Roger Schimmel, and Lewis, who she married in 2005. The couple had no children before Lewis performed at the Temple of Aaron event in 2020. He told American Jewish World that his wife had informed him of his final resting place over breakfast. "You're going to be next to me for the rest of eternity," she told him. "You're going to come to Temple of Aaron Cemetery." Lewis told the Minneapolis-based paper that he originally thought it'd be more fun to be buried at Forest Lawn Memorial in Los Angeles alongside other celebrities, but his wife convinced him he'd stand out more in the Roseville Cemetery. You're not joking there. "Real diehard fans will find the Temple of Aaron and put a rock by my stone," he said in the interview. "Am I depressing you too much with this?" His wife addressed the fans on social media on a post on February 29. "Thank you very much for your loving tributes. He would be thrilled beyond touched as I am." She encouraged mourners to donate to the Los Angeles-based charity ComedyGivesBack.com or for the charity of their choice. And the Sunday episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm did feature a tribute card to Richard Lewis at the top there. So, yeah, as an amazing comedian and someone I loved. Darn right, I will make a tribute out there, and I am putting a stone on your headstone, if I may, because that would be a privilege. So, yeah, he's buried up in Roseville. So, I imagine you will see people make that trip. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of comedians still alive that grew up with him would make that trip as well. So, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I need to once again reiterate something that the station was promoting and I was talking about today, but because important people have difficult and complicated schedules to work with, sometimes it doesn't work out as planned. We had mentioned earlier today that Doug Emhoff, the second gentleman of the United States, the vice president's husband, he was going to be on with Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake Today. Unfortunately, that did not come to fruition, but they are planning on him being on the show tomorrow. So make sure you're listening to, you should be listening to Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake every day. This afternoon, I guarantee you, you're going to get Native Roots, you're going to get Native issues, Native news, Native conversation, and you're not going to hear it anywhere else. And if you want to actually find out about, if you're not Native and you want to find out more about the Native community, this is the show to listen to. It's absolutely fantastic. It's a privilege to be the lead-in for that show, and I really encourage you to listen in every day. Hopefully, once again, schedules can be complicated. The Doug Emhoff interview will air tomorrow on Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake. So just keep that in mind. All right. 952-946-6205. Patrick, are we prepared with the Wheel of Destiny?
I am prepared.
All right. So if you don't know, is this our third or fourth time doing Wheel of Destiny?
I've lost track.
I have too. It is a magical moment that is scarred within our minds here. It is Listener Appreciation Month here at AM 950. We have been long overdue and remiss to not say thank you to everyone out there who has supported AM 950 over the years. Very grateful for all that you guys have done. You guys have been fantastic. So we've been giving away all sorts of things, concert tickets, books, gift certificates, restaurant gift certificates, all sorts of things all month long. And there's many ways for you to do that. Now, you can listen to the shows. You listen to my show and Native Roots Radio with Pilot and the crew, or you can listen to Greg Bakken and Ghost Box Radio. You should be listening to that show. Fantastic programming here at night on AM 950. You should be listening to all these shows. We have giveaways we're doing on these shows. Listen for your chance to win there. On top of that, there's ways for you to get entered into contests via the social media, namely the Facebook page for AM 950. Follow the AM 950 Facebook page, like the AM 950 Facebook page, comment on one of the posts. You do that, you're going to be entered in to the weekly Wheel of Destiny fun and excitement. Or as well, you can go get the email newsletter, go to am950radio.com, click on the email newsletter, sign up for that, and there are details on how you can get entered in to possibly win prizes as well with the Listener Appreciation Month. And so, yeah, lots of ways for you to win. Today, we are doing the Wheel of Destiny. We're going to do three spins of the wheel. We're going to be doing three spins of the wheel. There it is. It's looking pretty, doesn't it? A lot of people on there. So good luck to you on there. We should mention that this first spin, you will get yourself a copy of Tom Hartman's new book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back. That is up next. I have to do the clicking sound, so I have to look at this. Because click, 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 click. Click. Bar Levatz, congratulations. You have won yourself a copy of the book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back. Let's move on to the next one, which is another copy of The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back, from Tom Hartman. Go clickety, click, clickety, 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 click, 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 click. Sandra Brewer. Sandra, congratulations. You got yourself a copy of Tom Hartman's new book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back. This last spin, this is going to be for a $50 gift bottle from Vinaigrette. If you've not been to Vinaigrette, I mean, I love to cook. The cooking is one of my favorite things. The Vinaigrette has these great vinegars that add so much to your salads, to your food, to your recipes. This is great. It's a $50 gift bottle from Vinaigrette. You'll basically go to the store by April 30th and pick out what you want, a $50 value. Congratulations for you on this. So let's spin the wheel one last time. This is for the $50 clickety, click, click, clickety, click, click, clickety, click, 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 clickety, click, 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 click. Jason Hughesby. Jason, congratulations. You're going to get yourself a gift bottle worth $50 from Vinaigrette. Congratulations to you. And once again, we still have more giveaways this week. Plus, we have a grand prize. Now, I cannot tell you this because they have made me wear the clamp. And if I start getting out of line, they'll give me the shock. I can't tell you anything about the major grand prize, but I will say this. It's huge. It is huge. So listen for that. We'll have details on the grand prize. We'll have more on that as well for you as we go here. So congratulations to those winners as well as others that are going to be winning. We've had so many winners so far this month, and we're going to have more winners here in that grand prize. So listen for your chance to get involved there. 952-946-6205. So I got to go through this because we have talked repeatedly about Republicans and the mess that they have made for themselves because this far-right extremist part of the party is trying to basically take over the party. And frankly, they were welcomed in the front door by the Republican base because they needed foot soldiers, and they didn't care that these people were, you know, far-right extremist crazed loon balls. But they did welcome them on in, and now they're trying to basically to take over. And this is from Broadcorp, and this is a thread he put out here, and I want to read through this. I heard troubling news this weekend and wanted to share my concerns. Received a phone call about an upcoming political conventions. I was told that Representative John Kosnick, who currently is a state rep for Lakeville, Credit River, Elmo, New Market, and Eureka, that he is currently down there. He is being challenged by the Minnesota for the Minnesota GOP endorsement by an Action for Liberty aligned candidate named Rod Steiger, S-T-I-D-G-E-R. The Action for Liberty group, this is that far right extremist group that has been trying to infiltrate these the Republican Party. And obviously they're feeling as if, you know, they might be able to pull, you know, it's interesting. They have definitely picked a seat where there might be enough people that agree with them to kind of boot someone who has a chance at winning that seat to creating that seat unwinnable. But, you know, hey, that's not for me to decide. Going back to Broadcorp's thread on this, a person with spoke with had no idea that I knew Rick Steiger. They mentioned it in a passing along with other updates and information they had. I immediately spoke up and said, I knew of Rick Steiger. Based on my interaction with Steiger, I made it clear that, in my opinion, Steiger shouldn't serve in the Minnesota legislature. I want to be direct at the onset that nobody has asked me to post anything about Steiger. I am doing this because I want people to know about Steiger. Once I confirmed with sources that he was indeed running for the Minnesota legislature, I decided to share my experience with Steiger. I have tweeted, posted nearly 38,000 times, but I never shared anything about Steiger on this account. Now, you should remind her that Michael Broadcorp wrote a fascinating book called The Girls Are Gone, and I really recommend it. It's just a gripping real-life crime drama about two girls that were disappeared and basically kept on a farm out in outstate to keep them away from their father. That story takes so many freaking twists and turns. It is an exceptional read. Allison Mann, Michael Broadcorp, they did it. The Girls Are Gone. Go get the book. The Steiger makes a brief but significant appearance in the book. He posts the excerpt from the book here where he gets mentioned. My fifth grade daughter wrote a better and more accurate article. I'm just reading from the page he posted. The person noted the misspelling in their next message and sent right to correct the mistake. I thank you for the feedback, I responded. I thought one of my friends was playing a practical joke, so at 7:44, I called the number assigned to the text messages expecting to hear laughter on the other end of the phone call. I couldn't have been more wrong. A man answered the phone, and within seconds I realized he wasn't one of my friends. I would later learn his name was Richard Rick Steiger, and he was a friend of Sandra and Radine. And Sandra was a major, the mother in the case of The Girls Are Gone, in revolving kidnap the girls. You got to read the book. The book is insane. In our only phone call, Steiger refused to give me his name. He made it clear he knew who I was and didn't like my stories about the disappearances of Samantha and Gianna. Steiger didn't explain why he was so angry about my stories about two missing kids. He did say he was familiar with motorcycle gangs and I should watch my back in the future. He warned me that what goes around comes around and added that I should start sleeping with one eye open. Steiger sounded sober, alert, and completely aware he was making the threats. He acted like he was normal behavior to send harassing text messages and then threaten someone over the phone. After he delivered his menacing messages, I told him to not contact me again and ended the phone call. I told my family about the call. After a quick internet search, I learned the identity of the mystery caller and connected him to Michael Redden. I found a picture of Steiger wearing a leather vest showing his tattooed arms as he posed by a motorcycle in the desert. I called Christy DeSmith, my contact at the Star Tribune, and she suggested that I file a report with the Eagan Police Department. I did just that. I gave them the phone number for Steiger, and they called him. He admitted to texting me and was instructed by police to not contact me again. According to the police report, Steiger denied making any direct threats, but did acknowledge that some of the things he said to Michael may have been construed as threatening. These guys are just, you guys are really bad at this. Just saying. I would learn more about Steiger later. The full details of his involvement with Grazini, Rucki, and Riordan made his motivation for threatening me clear. I did not know at the time that Steiger would be the first of many people connected with them, with Grazini, Rucki, who would threaten me over the coming years for reporting on the case. So this is someone he's had, Broadcorp directly got threatened by as according to the story there. And he himself admits, hey, someone might have construed my threats as threats. The goal of Steiger's threats was to get me to stop reporting on the disappearance of the two missing kids. He was trying to intimidate me into stopping my work that would eventually be helpful to law enforcement in finding the kids alive, which it was. I found a recent picture of Steiger in an Action for Liberty event. Not surprised that Steiger would find himself at home with an Action for Liberty event. Steiger was never charged with any crimes related to the disappearance of the kids I wrote about, nor was there any evidence that he knew he or was involved, but Steiger was connected to people convicted of being involved and others labeled as persons of interest in the crimes. Steiger later testified on behalf of the defense in the criminal trial of one of the adults convicted of multiple felonies for the role in the disappearance of the missing girls. Steiger's court appearance didn't go well for him. In preparation for this thread, I did a court search on Steiger. In 2020, he pled guilty to third-degree DWI for carrying a pistol while under the influence of alcohol of 0.10 or more, so that's more than legally drunk. Steiger was also convicted of disorderly conduct, offensive, abusive, noisy, obscene in 2007. In my experience, Steiger is a terrible person. His threats to me were meant to stop my work and trying to help find the missing girls. I cannot convey in stronger language how unqualified I believe Steiger is to serve in the Minnesota legislature. I hope the information in my thread is helpful. I would say this. I would say it definitely would be helpful. I think it particularly when we look at John Kosnick and where he's running, I think definitively in Lakeville, it probably puts a lot of people on and has radar. But I want to point out, I don't know if this is nearly the anchor to this guy's campaign in places like Credit River, Elko, New Market, Eureka Townships as well. I'm as a matter of fact, my guess would be, having been down there, some of my kids have friends down there, and I have heard some stories that this guy might actually resonate down in those areas. So we'll have to see. I'm going to stand by Broadcorp on this one all day long. I've gotten to know this guy, especially since the girls are gone. That was a insanely good piece of journalism on his behalf. And Allison Mann, got to make sure I mention Allison in there as well. Girls Are Gone is a unbelievable book. And you should get that book. But at the same time, this is the problem the Republican Party has. If you look at this current primary, we got Super Tuesday tomorrow. Nikki Haley is by far your better candidate. I mean, she, you know, and this is, I'm not saying I would vote for her, not in a million years. I Mitt Romney, I might consider something like that, but not Nikki Haley. She is a fairly traditional Republican, but she's not the dribbling orange blob in the corner that Trump is right now. And I get it. You've welcomed the lunatic fringe into the party. The lunatic fringe controls a lot of what, especially the pro-Trump agenda. And it's so strong and so powerful that basically you've got it to where he's taking over the entire Republican Party and leaving in shambles what was once a party that was able to function with some capability. And now you've got this sort of thing. A guy who basically, by Michael Broadcorp's account, threatened him because he was trying to basically report on two missing girls. Yeah. This is you guys have done this to yourself. And you hate saying it like that, but it's the truth. You guys have done this to yourselves. And I wouldn't put it past him to pull off the upset down in that district. I'm not saying he will, but would anyone be surprised in this day and age? I mean, I mentioned last week they had the report out there that over half the Republicans in Minnesota want to install a Christian nationalist state. One sixth of the Republicans in the state of Minnesota think it's time to basically bring up arms against everyone else because I hate liberals. Now, where's my farm check? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I would say 20 years ago, guy has no chance. Now, he could be the Republican nominee, and likely that one seat alone could probably torpedo any chance the Republicans have at picking. The Republicans cannot lose one of their seats. They have to hold every seat and pick up some. And so if all of a sudden they're having to defend seats that they with candidates they can't keep in there, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. 952-946-6205. I'm running late. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So I got a few things to get through that involve guns. And, yeah, great. The first of all is the final deer harvest numbers are in. Are you ready? Let's take a look at it. The DNR reports. Now, reminder, Stubby, Pete Stauber up in the 8, he has insisted that there was the deer hunting season was wiped out because of the wolves and we need to start hunting wolves. That's kind of been his, I'm embellishing, paraphrasing a little bit, but not by much. You know, he's saying the wolf hunt was destroyed. Ugh. Yeah, something like that. Like I said, embellishing, paraphrasing a little bit, but still, you get the point. The DNR has reported that hunters harvested 158,678 deer in 2023, down 8% from the prior year. But that was partially due to the fewer registered hunters. In the end, the hunters of 2023, the success rate for hunting, 32%, was identical to the previous year. Interesting. Hunters and their allies have made big stink over the alleged lack of deer in the state's northeast sector, and they blame wolves. And while the harvest decline was indeed steepest in that sector, it was also the drop-off in the number of hunters overall. The hunting success rate in the northeast dipped by just 3 percentage points, hardly the catastrophe some have tried to make it out to be. And it's time for my new segment here on AM 950. Maybe you suck at hunting. Have you thought about that? All right. So, first up on maybe you suck at hunting, have you thought about that? The Northeast Minnesota deer hunters. Maybe you suck at hunting. Have you thought about that? All right, there you go. I think we've kind of established kind of that this might just not be the wolves. It might be them. Now, I should mention your success rate is 32%. So, basically, you got a third, one out of three chance of getting the deer anyway. And I get it. In this day and age, and let's face it, my guess is the vast majority of these people that want to start shooting wolves are mega. You know, I think we all can see that train coming down the tracks. And I get it. The standard MAGA thing is that it's not you that's the problem. I would have had 5 million deer if not for those pesky liberals. When the reality is just maybe you suck at hunting. You're just not really good at hunting. And these numbers seem to point at wasn't the wolves. Maybe you sucked a little bit. I'm just going to just say this. It's not like there weren't deer in the northeastern part of the state. For God's sakes, you freaking clowns. And it was a very heavy snow last year up there. And that played a role too. But you guys, because you want things to be so linear, and this is a thing of the far right loon ball brigade that vaccines, you know, cause everyone to die or autism or all the wolves. I didn't get a deer this season, so it's the wolves that took him out. No, it just, you know, you don't want to look at the reality. You don't want to look at the stats. You don't want to look at the things. You don't want to accept the fact that maybe, just maybe, you suck at hunting. Someone has to say it to you. I have no problem saying it to you. Maybe you suck at hunting. Because I know a lot of guys who are... I know guys who have gone out deer hunting and all of a sudden start hitting the bottle because they're sitting up in a tree and they got to stay warm somehow. And next thing you know, they're asleep. And I didn't get it. The deer weren't out there today. Weren't they? Or the deer looking at it like, what the hell is that up in the tree sleeping? It's the weirdest looking bird I've ever seen in my life. I'm not saying that was you, but, you know, It seems more that you guys just suck at hunting rather than it was the Wolves. So let's make sure we keep our dire frustrations in check. Time to go look in the mirror. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
The Babe. Power of voodoo.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to start off with a story from this weekend. On Saturday morning, Wright County deputy is on administrative leave after county officials say he shot and killed an armed driver during a traffic stop, according to a press release on Saturday morning. The scene, which was cleared out by about 2 p.m. that afternoon, appeared to be a cul-de-sac near a playground in a residential area on Ivory Avenue Northeast near the city of St. Michael. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension was on scene investigating well into the afternoon. Wright County said it started with an early morning traffic stop made by a deputy on Ivory Avenue Northeast. So it didn't happen during the day. It happened in the middle of the night. The driver told Eyewitness News was told was the only person in the stopped car, got out with a weapon and confronted the deputy and refused to comply with the deputy's commands, according to the initial press release. It's unclear the nature of the confrontation or how long it lasted. Officials just said it resulted in the deputy discharging his firearm, striking the subject. According to the press release, life-saving measures were immediately started, but the driver died at the scene. About 8 hours later, they witnessed a deputy squad car and another emergency vehicle being towed from the scene as investigators wrapped up, leaving the street quiet once again. Multiple neighbors reported hearing what sounded like two gunshots, then three more gunshots before first responders came flooding in. "We woke up to the sound of like maybe four or five gunshots," said Jennifer Carbert. She and her husband, Mark Carbert, got the jolting wake-up call just after about 4:45. "After we heard the gunshots, I looked out the window and saw that one deputy was out there, and within 5 seconds there was another, and in a couple minutes there were dozens of cop cars out there. The couple witnessed the flood of flashing lights at the back of their house." It was kind of unusual. It was an unusual thing for us, said Jennifer, acting, "It's just upsetting. It's not so shocking. It may have been, you know, in years past, it feels like just too common." They said they did not identify the type of weapon the driver had, whether it was used, and the deputy was injured during the traffic stop. Apparently, I read in one story that the weapon that the driver allegedly had was a knife. Now, what happened in Burnsville was an absolute tragedy. And for everyone out there who keeps trying to say it's everybody against us as the police, I don't know if you saw the massive public mourning for the two lost officers and the first responder after a crazed man opened fire with an assault weapon on the police in Burnsville. But this town, including myself, shed more than a few tears for that loss. So this idea that sometimes when a story like this comes on out, there's this mentality of you're always against us. That's just not true. And I bring that up because something's missing here. Now, the other element of a story which I'd read in another story was that the victim was hit twice. So let's go back on this here. If the officer is standing within, say, 5 or so feet of this individual, and he has a knife, if it is indeed true he had a knife, and he's not complying, and he starts swinging it in an aggressive manner at the police officer, absolutely. Law enforcement did the right thing here. You have to protect yourself. Drop him. You know, that's legit. And you can't just sit there and just say, well, is he serious? You know, if he's swinging a knife at you and he's close to you. And I'm not saying he's even in arm reach, because I'm just saying if he's, say, within 5-10 feet of you, then you just got to look at that and say, you know what? No, this is just too dangerous, and you got to try to, you know, defend yourself. Absolutely. Now, did everybody just hear what I said? Did you? That if this officer was within, say, 10 feet, and this guy pulls a knife, and if it was a knife, and starts wildly wailing and trying to stab this officer, the officer is in the right to defend themselves, and although the driver is dead, the officer, no one really can question why the officer did shoot him. Understandable. Did you hear that? Because there's a tendency to not hear that element of the story. But we don't know what happened. Now, if it was true that the suspect was hit twice, there are five rounds that were fired, though, by the it sounds like the eyewitness, or the ear witness, I guess would be the case here. They heard five shots fired, four or five shots fired. So multiple shots did not, if the suspect had a knife, I don't think knives shoot bullets. So that would presume then that if they were the only person with a gun on the scene was the officer, that the officer was responsible for all the bullets that were fired. Two of which did not hit the subject, or possibly a third one if it was indeed five rounds. But where was this officer when he pulled the gun and started firing? Where was he? Was he 30 feet away? Was he 20 feet away? 20 feet is quite a bit of distance. And I'm sure we'll get the, but he could have been an Olympic sprinter, Matt. 20 feet's nothing. I doubt he was an Olympic sprinter. And he was armed with a knife. Now, part of my reason I question this stuff is because it's not included here. And if you're going to go on out there and you're going to put something in the media that's going to have an agenda, and clearly this is kind of the point of this story, and many of the copies of this version of the story that have been released is definitely in a, hey, justified kill. He's on leave, but this, he wasn't complying. He had a weapon. Although once again, they don't, if it's true, it was a knife. They specifically are leaving the knife out of it because the knife does change this. When I was in the military, we had to go through weapons training. I know the Army, what a hoot, but if you were in a situation where you were trying to capture a prisoner and they were armed with a gun and you were armed with a gun, you know, it's war. The concept is you're trying to get the other guy. And so it's, you know, them or you. And that's kind of the thing. If it was a case where you were trying to capture a prisoner and the individual was armed with a knife or a bayonet or something like that, and they were 20, 25 feet away from you, they would tell you to shoot at the ground first to try to get them to stop. If they did not, lift your arms up slightly and see if you can get them in the leg. And if you get them in the leg, they're going down because a bullet, as much as you want to think it's die hard and you can put eight rounds into someone and they're going to get up and keep going. No, that doesn't work that way. Round enters the body, blasts out the backside of wherever it hits. And in a case of a leg, you're going to have to get a tourniquet on that guy pretty quick because he's going to bleed out because you got probably got the femoral artery. I mean, that's just the way it works. So, and then if you miss the leg shot or the guy does somehow manage to keep stumbling towards you, then you basically have to make the decision to make that shot. That doesn't sound like what happened here. Now, once again, if this perp was within striking distance, 5-10 feet away from the officer, was wielding a knife, then this officer didn't do anything wrong at all. Probably should get a medal for surviving it. And that's just that. But because I asked the question of how far away from the suspect was the officer when he shot him, and was it a knife as it was described in one story, or was it a gun? Because if it was a gun, obviously that becomes a very different story too. But if it was a knife and he was 30 feet away from him, what are we doing here? Because the last I checked, refusing to comply with orders is not an instantaneous death sentence in the state of Minnesota. At least it shouldn't be. What if the guy was drunk? What if the guy didn't understand where he was at? What if he was on drugs? You don't know. But he's far enough away from the guy, if he's 30 feet away, if it was, that you got to ask the question of, all right, what was going on here? And was this, it's not a freaking video game. It's not. And so, as we mourn the loss of the Burnsville officers, that doesn't mean you can't ask questions on a shooting like this. And I'm specifically bringing this point up now as this has happened to bring this forward. Once again, this guy could have been very much in the right. He had very limited time to react. He was 5 feet away from the guy. The guy has a knife. He's not complying. Boom, you got to drop him. Like I said, get the medal out. He deserves it. But if he was 30 feet away and he just wasn't complying, and you're hitting him center mass from 30 feet away because you're scared, that's not an effective use of force. And sure, I mean, we'll get this standard character assassination of the individual. Well, he could have become a demon creature, Matt, and killed everybody in the cul-de-sac with his fangs and teeth. And oh my God, thank God the police officer got him. But that's not a real thing. And no, I don't think we pay police officers to basically, for convenience at a distance, kill somebody because, you know, they might be a bad person. We need to have the rest of the details. Once again, you want to put out this narrative? Fine, Wright County Sheriff, by all means. I'm sure that you'll have no problem then in releasing the body cam footage or the vehicle footage of the car. We can see that your story backs up that. And once again, there are multiple outs I'm giving here. You know, if the guy was close with a knife, if he was at a distance with a gun, if it was a gun and he was firing rounds at the officer, well, all right, that's a different thing. Obviously, officer's got to defend himself. I think we all learned that, you know, with the Burnsville, for goodness sakes. But if it was a knife and it was 30 feet away and he's not complying, was he really a threat? And I don't want to hear the hypothetical threat. I want to hear, was he actually a threat? No, he wasn't. And I can say that because I was through military training. All right? I can say that. No, he wasn't a threat. So then why are we plugging in with center mass rounds? And what happened to the other rounds that were fired if the only gun that was shot was the officer's gun? Now, once again, there is nothing wrong with asking those questions. And as I've said multiple times, there's plenty of outs for this officer. And, you know, in many of those cases, you give the guy an award afterwards. Just let's release the body cam footage. And just we can all see what happened. Body cam footage, the dash mounted footage. And if all of a sudden me asking that is a threat to the police, well, maybe the problem isn't me asking for it. It's what that video shows. Because I'm getting tired of when police officers release video footage and before they do, it's like, no, I've been fighting for a year and a half to prevent anyone from seeing this. But, you know, I want to just warn the public out there, you know, passions get hot when you see stuff like this. And I don't want that anymore. Just release the video footage. Let us see what happened. And we can make the determination of what was legit or not. And I have said that in the state of Minnesota, we do have plenty of laws that basically already back up police officers. I have zero doubt this officer that's being charged down on Hennepin County for the shooting down on 94, he's going to be found innocent. I have zero doubt because, once again, the laws are written to where a police officer just has to say, I was scared, and that's the case. The only time that seems to basically, you know, be not the case is when clearly a police officer makes a mistake, like Potter shooting Dante Wright, as opposed to using a taser on him, or in the case of it was nothing like they said it was. It was, you know, he was kneeling on his back of the neck for 10 minutes. And so you guys weren't trying to save him at all. You were trying to murder him in the streets at 38th in Chicago. That's what you were doing. That's clearly what you were doing, you know, and it shows that. I don't think there's anything that is going to offset that. I think that officer, all he has to do is scream, I was scared, and that trooper is, and then he'll be found innocent. but we should be able to look at this. This goes back to now to a Fox 9 story. Sheriff Bob Fletcher isn't mincing words about the increase in assaults on law enforcement, which I agree with. This is not a good thing. After one of its deputies was injured by gun and fire over the weekend. Ramsey County deputy was injured Friday night when he was shot during a chase. Investigators say a passenger in the suspect vehicle opened fire, striking the deputy in his bulletproof vest. 6 inches higher, we would be having a dead officer, said Sheriff Fletcher. Fletcher is concerned about the increasing prevalence of attacks on law enforcement, saying it's made retention and recruitment extremely hard. Nothing you've said so far at this point, I disagree with. It is a crime. It is something that is happening with more relevance. It is something we have to deal with. I would make an argument. There's an obvious problem here with ever since the Republican Party has insisted that we pour guns, wheelbarrow full of guns down in the intersections of streets and basically say, good luck, everybody. Yeah, that's been kind of where the problems come. The proficiency of guns everywhere. That seems to be the frontline problem for cops. But that's that. The assaults on police officers have more than doubled from 2019 to 2022. Sheriff says mental health and access to guns are contributing factors. Hey, great. But then Ramsey County Sheriff mostly blames anti-police rhetoric from some elected officials. You can't just label an entire profession as easily as they have, and I'm talking about high-level officials. It's damaging, said Fletcher. The young kids have heard a message for the last 5 or 5 years are emboldened. You think that young kids are inspired by elderly politicians. No, that's not the case. The words did not shoot your officer, Sheriff Fletcher. The words are not why the bulletproof vest had to save their life. It was the gun, stupid. And I hate saying that to you, Fletcher, but it's truth. It was the guns. And the reason why there's a direct correlation between guns being poured into the streets of this country and more assaults on police officers. And that has nothing to do with the words of an elderly politician that most young people couldn't identify if their life depended on it. That's you demanding blind obedience from police officers so that, or myself, a media personality, who then by asking the questions about the Wright County shooting, I'm out of line. You've got to just take the police officer's written version of the story and just go with it, and that's just that. That's not going to happen, sir. But even with my words, I'm going to try this. Patrick, I've got, right now, I'm going to use on one side my voice, and the other side, I have a gun. And we're going to see which one of them hurts you, okay? Patrick, I dislike your taste in shirts. Are you bleeding?
No.
All right, now stand still and don't move. All right, now you see? What's the threat? Is the threat, I have no gun, by the way. No, is the threat, and Patrick, I wouldn't do that. And by the way, your shirts are lovely. I do like that. I was just looking for an example of something. So pardon me. But what just happened there? Was my words the bad thing? Or all of a sudden when you say, well, God, he's got a gun? That's the bad thing, isn't it, Sheriff? Yeah, it is. So instead of sitting there saying, let senior politician hurt my feelings, woohoo, maybe you should try to stop what is really the biggest threat to police officers in this country. And it's the unbridled amount of freaking guns on the street. Because if you're pro-cop, you should be pro-gun control. So stop it. You're embarrassing yourself and you look stupid, sir. The problem that you're having is the unfettered access to guns in this country. And until we address that, guess what? This is going to get worse. But you keep telling me about how that politician said something I dislike. Because I can tell you this, whatever they said, that's not coming at you at a high velocity rate and going to leave a bigger hole at the backside than the front side. All right? All right. All right, please. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Pro cops, if you are pro cop, then you've got to be pro gun control because that's the biggest threat to police officers right now. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hey, Mr. DJ, put a record on. I want to dance with my baby.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Final thing today. I want to call out the, you know, I mentioned earlier I was ripping on the New York Times because easy. It's, you know, that's some jaded news right there. I want to take a shot at the Strib too, if I could. They got an editorial in there today. Turning Minnesota into a sanctuary state is a mistake. And I think it's Schultz, the guy that ran for attorney general, is writing the article. Here's the problem I have with this. Now, once again, this issue is not going to go anywhere. As a matter of fact, I was looking at some stories. There was a bill that was introduced by some Democrats to try to make Minnesota a sanctuary state. But by mid-February, it was clear that bill had no chance. All right. So we're done talking here, isn't it? I mean, it's multiple Democrats came out against the bill. They would need every Democrat on board for them to even have a chance at it. It's not going to pass. And even the House and Senate leadership of the DFL has said, no, that's not on the agenda this time around. So Minnesota is not going to become a sanctuary state. So, yeah. So at this point, and I don't know if Star Tribune, because a few of the stories you guys have written have said that, oh yeah, there's no chance this is going to get passed. So you might want to, your departments might want to talk with each other, because putting this in there is irrelevant unless you're trying to help Republicans create an issue. Let's face it, Republicans can't really run on anything. As much as they dislike what the Democrats did last time around, there's not a lot there that they can really fight on. And even the one or two things that they think they can get, like with the resource officers in school, the Democrats are fixing, and so they're not going to really have too much of an argument after that. So they've got to create fake issues to make it seem like they're doing something. And that's a great example of this. There isn't a bill, but they're acting like there's a bill. And so when the bill doesn't pass, they're going to argue, well, thank God we stopped that bill from passing, when they didn't really have anything to do with it. And then argue, well, and they almost passed the bill last time, so you better elect us this time. I mean, it is quite literally the Star Tribune participating in creating a false issue, which then the Republicans can run on. I could do this too. I could easily say turning Minnesota into a no abortion state is a mistake. I could write that editorial. Star Tribune wouldn't publish it, even though plenty of Republicans have said they want to do that. I could say, turning Minnesota into a state that basically forbids Muslims from being here, that's a mistake. I could make an argument that many Republicans have said that they want to do this. But the Star Tribune would never allow me to publish that. And so here they are, though, helping out the Republicans by making up a fake issue. Nice job, Star Tribune. I got a new name suggestion for you. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.